Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes, burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips, hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning, getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of this show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make a difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter. For sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Blog Talk Radio. We are the Late Night Poets, and that is a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. You can follow along in the chat, and we will post the poems so you can read. So I am Aphasiana, and with me I have my co-host, Babbler. Welcome, Babbler.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. Thanks for having me back. It's been a bit.
Of course. It's great to have you back. I went a little wild today and dyed my hair purple, so I'm just like, I have purple hair.
That's so funny. I was just talking about dyeing my hair purple the other day. So,
really?
That's so funny that you dyed your hair purple. Yeah, like literally 2 days ago, I was actually talking to my mom, and I'm like, no, I'm thinking about dyeing my hair purple. I don't know, just I like the way purple fades into like a pink on me.
Yeah,
some
it's
other
a good
colors fade. Kind of
fade
to like some hideous ones in the deep thing.
Yeah, you can get kind of a weird green happening sometimes. I did the underneath layers purple and then the tips. So it's depending on the angle or how I wear it, it can look like my regular brown with just like a little wisp of purple. Or if I like put it up slightly or part it a different way, then I have like this bright flare of purple. So it's adjustable depending on the situation.
Nice. Flexible hair.
Yeah. So last week we did the seven deadly sins as represented by Halloween monsters. And this week we're doing the virtues. So it's kind of like because we're part sinner, part saint, we did the sinner last time, and then this is leaning towards the saint. But it's not from a religious perspective. It's Benjamin Franklin had these goals for himself, and he had 13 virtues that he wanted to reach because he thought it would make him a better man. So the virtues that we're talking about are temperance, silence, order, resolution, frugality, industry, justice, moderation, cleanliness, tranquility, chastity, and humility. And that was the inspiration for the poems tonight. They could choose one. They could do multiples. At first, it was a new write contest, but we were a little short. So today, I opened it up to pre-writes, and we got a few in there at the end that were pre-written. So we'll see how well they fit. But I think it'll be a good mix of poetry.
Great. Exciting. Fun topic. Good attributes in there to talk about. Different ways it can be taken, for sure.
Exactly. Like, a lot of them are open to interpretation. When I wrote mine, I started writing, like, the positive spin on them, and I was having trouble. So mine ended up being sort of like how I don't fit any of these. So we'll see how people did. Fabler, will you read the first poem?
Absolutely. This is CV13 by Daniel Dischino. I am not an artist, but I am art, still life to some, epic novella to others, and music I will make, but not the musical kind. I move with harmonies, and I pulse with rhythm. You may think yourself blind and deaf to what I speak. So look within, as my canvas is thought, and the underpainting, the root chord, the first draft is self-restraint. A masterpiece of control is temperance of chaos. So with nothing, I start. Silence, the birthplace of sound. And I build, I plan, I organize, voracious, resolution, a vision of future. And I waste nothing. Every experience, a color on the canvas, a blink of an eye, a facial expression. Every emotion, an orchestral note, a word on a page, my voice in the air. And I create. A common man to reflect the commonality of all men, my equal. And with plan in place, I know my limits. I stop. Reflection is a harsh, clear mirror, and I clean it to see the pure clarity. The eraser humbles the pencil, and all is clean. There is peace in perfection. There is calming from create. No writer has ever written more calming words than the end. And no writer has written what I have. I am become triumph. As creative paragon, the lust of life be my reward, as work has fueled my decadent desires. But that is not the creative master's reward, for like all art, I am built on a foundation, and the foundation of my journey was control. And so, unchained from want, I am free to roam the world, but I find I am humbled, for I see what I have created, plagiaristic replica, a billion times before, each one with the most slight and subtle differences, and they are the absolute of fascinating. So express I will, and of others I will see, and I will grab hold of that forgotten of virtues, sincerity. End quote.
Great read and a wonderful poem. I really love Daniel's writing. This had so much to it. I liked the canvas is thought. You know, thought is the place where all of this can be painted. His thoughts have the potential to have so much. And then talking about the emotions as the color, as the note that the orchestra is playing. And then the orchestra of his mind will put together all those emotions and make them into something and put it together so not only is it within himself, but it can be a word on the page, his voice in the air. He can share those things. I love that way of depicting making art. And then there's that questioning of himself at the end where, has everything already been said? Has everything already been done in some way? So it just all seems like a plagiarism because it's been done, even if he's not consciously copying it. So much has already been said that he questions if he can say anything new of value. I think this is a really introspective and beautiful piece that kind of flows into the mind of the artist. What did you think, Babbler?
I think there's some really beautiful visuals in here. You know, I almost picture like a musician starting slowly and then working into a frenzy and then kind of stepping back to look at the mess in a way. Not mess isn't a bad thing, but just, you know, the chaos that is like the creation of art. And I was really kind of struck by the end, honestly, as the big piece to me, you know, to be humbled to see what you have created, but also to see that in a way it's plagiaristic. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've written a poem or painted a portrait or something of that nature and looked at it and been like, is there anything really unique about this? Because sometimes it feels like something I've read or seen 1,000 times, you know, and it's just my iteration, like me adding another drop to the bucket of things that have been done. But then, you know, I remember reading this quote once about how artists have a tendency to see their own work and not like it because they can tell that they have done it. And that like piece of self-reflection tends to be what the artist doesn't like. But at the same time, it's what gives their work intrinsic value. Like it's what makes them different. So it's like this weird struggle of wanting to stand out and yet also wanting to be this, like, to fit in. And I think it kind of grasps this. You know, it feels like a work of passion. And then also the tie in the line, you know, of saying, so I'll express I will, and of others I will see, and I will grab hold of that forgotten of virtues, sincerity. You know, so even if it's not appreciated or even if I don't like what I've created or, you know, I feel like it's redundant in some way, at least I did it sincerely. You know, like at least it was an honest expression and representation as a person, as an artist or as a piece of art. So I really enjoyed the piece. I thought it was really kind of beautiful and it had a nice almost kind of crescendo feeling to it. And the fact that the words the end show up in the middle of the piece, like, it's pretty cool as well. I thought this was a great Daniel. I enjoyed it.
That's a great comment. And I love what you were saying about the seeing a little bit of yourself in the art and feeling uncomfortable about it and the thing that makes it your art is also what makes you not like it. So it's like the thing that you should be proud of, but you question. There's that kind of imposter syndrome feeling of like, oh, I don't know if what I contributed is enough. Yeah, that's such a strong feeling. We have a new caller, and I can't tell who it is. May I ask who's joined us?
This would be Kel.
Hi, Kel.
Hello, Kel.
Welcome.
Hello, hello, ladies. I don't know who's all here. Anyway, you want me to comment?
Yes, that'd be great.
Absolutely. Well, I thought this was an absolutely beautiful poem on all the virtues represented. It's just really epic. I can't say that there's any bit that I noticed that I did not understand or enjoy totally. It's sincerely a very beautiful piece of art.
I have to agree with you. It is. And I like the way that he broke down his stanzas, too. Like, every once in a while, you know, there are shorter ones that emphasize certain parts. It's not your typical everything is the same size. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. I think it really worked well for him here. Kel, I'm going to put your poem up if you're ready for it.
Definitely. Okay. Virtuous Life of Franklin. Although your heart may lead to your tummy, be extra careful how much yummy you load in your tummy. Use your words wisely with efficiency, as small talk tends to bore or annoy your fellow citizens. Something to be said about a place for everything and everything in its place, even in the workplace. If you say you want to do this or even that, don't let your mind wander. Do this and then that. Leftovers is all well and good. As long as they are used otherwise, don't waste on throwaway science projects. Please, oh please, use your time wisely. Find something to do, even if it's something you don't wish to do. Please and thank you are just good manners. But mannerly manners will keep you nice and sweet. For Christ's sake, don't hurt me or him or her. Put your hurtful words and fists away. Be nice or stay away. Simple enough for some reasons to apply. The philosophy of not going to extremes in speech or otherwise. Take a shower. Damn, don't raise a stink. Wash your clothes so they don't reek. Don't be the stinky kid. Don't be bothered by the little things or overthink problems that you can't control without drama. Keeping your legs closed and your pants on will prevent loss of reputation or unwanted offspring, among other things like STDs. Be more like Jesus as advised by Socrates. At least that's the gist of it, in my opinion. And the poem.
Thank you, Kel, for
Thank
that
Kel.
Read and write. Sorry, go ahead, Babbler.
That's okay. Did you want to comment first, or should I just go ahead?
You go ahead.
You go ahead.
I enjoyed the... I really enjoyed the formatting of this, Kel, like the little couplet and how they kind of mimic the format of the 13 virtues of Benjamin Franklin, how each one kind of has a line or two next to it. It almost feels like reading parables or, oh gosh, I can't think of the word, but they have them a lot in the Eastern cultures where it's
just the short, like, tidbits of advice or pieces of truth that are interesting to read. So I really like this. It's just like a little amalgamation of good advice or words to live by. And I feel like some of them almost touch on a third meaning that's just tucked slightly out of view, like something to be said about a place for everything and everything in its place, even in the workplace, makes me think of leave the work at work, and the home life at home, kind of keeping things separated and compartmentalized. You know, because there's the physicality of a place for everything, like keeping things neat and tidy. But there's also, you know, not dragging your work life home or your home life to work. So I feel like there's almost duality in meaning of this. So I thought this was a really interesting take to touch on all of the different virtues that Benjamin Franklin wanted to live by and ways to live by them, if you so choose. So excellent, right, Cal? I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it, too. I think this is like a contemporary twist on them where, you put it into to our modern terms because, you know, obviously he did it a long time ago and he's quite formal in his writing, and the writing about it originally was maybe not as accessible to people today. And you bring the contemporary feeling to it, and you have like this little bit of kind of like sarcasm and snark that I love. I also loved when you talk about the leftovers becoming a science project, because that's how my dad puts it, of like if you don't throw it out and it starts to get moldy or something, he's like, there's a science project in the fridge. It means I have to go get rid of it. But I say that like it's present tense. I haven't lived there in 15 years. But when I read that, I think my dad's mad at me. I'm still guilty of it. He's just not here to comment.
I'm really glad you caught the sarcasm, because that's kind of, I was trying to be a little bit sarcastic and snarky as well as just put them all out there.
Definitely. I felt that, and I liked it.
Thank you.
The take a shower one was funny, too. Just don't raise a stink. And the thing is, that works in multiple ways, too. Don't raise a stink as in literally don't smell, but also, you know, don't make a big deal about things, which you were also saying, don't be bothered by the little things. So the raising a stink can also work for that. I think that you did this in a really smart and fun kind of way.
That's what I was going for. Thank you, dear.
You're welcome. Thanks for sharing it. I'm going to read one by our list. I will leap, I will dance, by our list. Number one, I am nailed to the architecture of agape and keratos, my name branded in the wooden antennae of love. The yellow sky caresses the face of the other, who runs towards oblivion, caught in the rigid claws of angst. Black night upholds my outstretched arm. I dribble alms to Les Miserables. Two. Ever-expanding pool of light. You encompass me. You pull the dull scimitar from my waistband. White marble breaks. Fire and blood tango on the ripened hill, a melon of earth still burgeoning within. An avalanche hammers in the frangipane on my plate. Eat for love's sake. Yes, eat and drink to sustain the glory of hidden gods. Three. Water spills into baskets across my back, bathes my legs in tepid particles of mud. Braided clouds frown on the way we live. We say future, but crave only now. Repeated infinitely in time, beyond time, the ransom of the divine will be paid. in freshly minted Bitcoin. I perch on the balcony alone. I will make my leap to faith. I will dance in the silence on hallowed ground. End poem. And it says in the AN that that was based on the virtue of silence.
Wonderful.
Sadler, do you want to leave the comment?
Wonderful read. I really enjoyed this piece. The visuals are so fascinating to me. You know, just the yellow sky caresses the face of the other. It sounds, you know, it's like a description of a sunrise or a sunset, you know, who run towards oblivion, caught in the rigid claws of angst. Black night upholds my outstretched arm. I dribble alms to Le Miserable. It sounds like someone, you know, I visualize someone crying at sunset, you know, just kind of pining at the end of what, you know, is kind of open-ended, but just, you know, just sunset itself. And then to be followed by an ever-expanding pool of light, pulling a dull scimitar from a waistband, just, you know, this sudden, like, passion, you know, an avalanche hammers the frangipane on my plate, you know, like, just this sweet kind of almond paste. It's so interesting to mix, like, flavors, you know, a melon of earth. Just the imagery in this is just really beautiful, you know, and then this tie into modernity at the end. The ransom of the divine will be paid in freshly minted Bitcoin. There's like almost bitterness to that. You know, I don't get the impression that this is like, you know, yay, Bitcoin. It feels very, I don't know, it feels almost cheapened, you know, the experience, almost like making something digital is like this high price to pay. I really enjoyed all of the imagery in this. There's so many interesting twists and turns, and the uses of language. If water spills into baskets across my back. Like, what imagery is that? Just, I don't know. The places that this takes my mind is really quite beautiful. I really enjoyed it. I just thought it was visually very stunning. I loved the piece. I'll probably read it a couple more times and kind of tickle some larger overarching themes out of it. But in the moment, I thought it was just visually very gorgeous. Kel, what did you think?
Oh, I quite agree, Babel. This is visually, it's absolutely a gorgeous write. I mean, his wording is just stunning, absolutely. But, you know, I couldn't quite get the theme from that. It was kind of, to me, I was trying to figure out where he was going with it. So it just kind of got lost in that. But, yeah, it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece. Absolutely. I just don't quite understand it.
I agree. It's so very beautiful. And I almost think that's part of it, you know, like part of the meaning of it. You know, like he uses, you know, the word like agape, which is just, being caught in awe, you know, it's like a mouth, you know, just, you know, enjoyment. So I think, you know, maybe some of the meaning of it is just to be lost in that wonder as an expression, just as God. What did you think of Aziana?
I loved it. I thought it was gorgeous. Like you said, the imagery was amazing, and unusual in really cool ways. Like the pulling the dull scimitar was such a cool addition there. And it's not the melon that's ripened. It's the hill. On the ripened hill, a melon. I thought that was an interesting choice. His vocabulary is fantastic. Like, I love that he has the Latin in the beginning, which I didn't know how to say the first word, but I'm pretty sure caritas is the second one, which sadly I know from the TV show Angel, where he's a vampire, because there was the bar caritas, and that was, like, their haven. It's where the demons hanged out. that's where all my knowledge comes from. I think this is beautiful. I loved the avalanche hammers, the frangipane on my plate. It's very unusual imagery in the best way. The end, though, really hit me because as he's perched on the balcony about to make his leap, I kind of felt like that might be a suicide moment, dancing in the silence on hallowed ground. Like, in one... He's in awe of, like, the sunset and stuff, but there was something really dark about that ending where I felt like it was a twist in the other way. I could be totally wrong about that. But I kind of wondered if it had a bit of a morbid end there as he decided to embrace the silence in a different way. But, I mean, that could just be my own... strange interpretation. I don't know. In general, I thought it was beautiful.
As I'm kind of reperusing it here as we talk, I almost wonder if it's not like a depiction of the crucifixion. This pulling agape in it, which is, you know, like a fatherly, like almost godlike kind of love, and the branded in wooden antenna, you know, nailed to the architecture. I almost wonder if this isn't a really kind of beautifully, interestingly descriptive kind of walk through, like, crucifixion and Last Supper kind of a thing. I would still need to read it a few more times, but I'm almost getting, you know, that kind of religious undertone to it. With just some of the word choices, you know, and then dancing in silence on hallowed ground. And, you know, making that leap of faith when you started out with talking about agape and caritas and the wooden antenna. I'd have to peek at it a few more, but
wow,
just a thought.
I didn't see it at all until you said it, but... Your points make sense, so that might be where he was going with it. Very cool.
Yeah,
that's why I love hearing everyone's interpretation, because I catch things that I would not have on my own. So cool.
Where are we off to now?
We have one by Wayne Gent, if you can read that.
Absolutely. This is Tranquility by Wayne Gent. Cool, crisp air, while the mirrored lake stands still, peace and harmony, and relaxed, calm and tranquil, a clean feeling of satisfaction. I don't have to worry. Everything is smiling. There's no need for me to hurry. Soft words spoken, my beliefs are warm and true. Gentle smile, content with only the sky's blue. I reminisce while the light wind brushes the brow. No storm on the horizon, no problem for now. Total comfort, feeling of love, breathing deep. If at any more at ease, I would have to sleep. No fear in the air, I don't have to think about danger. Enjoy life, I don't let tranquility become a stranger. End quote. I really enjoyed this. It's very calming, you know, and I think that works so well for going with the virtue of tranquility. The stanzas and the rhyme scheme kind of add to it. It's very paced and very neatly tied up, which gives it that tranquil feeling. It almost feels like a oh gosh, my brain today isn't finding words. A mantra in kind of a way, like very meditative, with the pacing, you know, cool, crisp air while the mirrored lake stands still. Like, there's just such a pacing to it that's really kind of peaceful and metered, and I think almost kind of lulls the reader into the sense of tranquility. And I love the tie-in at the end, too, where it's, you know, I don't let tranquility become stranger. Like, I do this often. Like, it's a practice to remember to live for the moment and enjoy the moment and remind myself not to take things so seriously and not to worry or rush. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very peaceful piece, but while describing that, also kind of imparts that feeling to the reader because of the rhythm of it. Well done. What did you think, Crazy, on it?
I like it. I think that last line really does it for me, that I don't let tranquility become a stranger, because he describes this beautiful, tranquil scene, and what makes it a virtue is he prioritizes that. He seeks out this tranquility. He connects with it and makes it a priority. I thought that was really good. I recognize the picture. That's Banff. I've been there. It is beautiful, and it's kind of impossible not to have this kind of peace when you're there. I mean, it's exhilarating, depending on if you like climbing the mountain or something. But it does have that peaceful feeling of like being away from everything and just seeing the beauty of it. I wonder if he actually went to Banff and experience that, because it's a perfect place for it. And I really like the way that he describes the light wind as it brushes the brow, as there's that feeling of like the wind like in your eyebrows, which is like incredible, because like your eyebrow hairs are not very long, or at least like mine aren't, and I mean, it's probably bigger because he's a man, but like that feeling where it's like every little hair is just like gently stirred by the wind, and it's actually quite windy up there, depending on where you are in Banff. So it's beautiful and tranquil, but also there's movement, you know? It's not just stillness. It's experiencing things with an inner stillness, even when it's moving around you. I thought it was absolutely beautiful in creating that scene. And, you know, it brings me back there. So I think he did a wonderful job.
Great comment. Like, I know, for me, the best thing to do to get out of my own head is to do something physical and exhilarating. And it does kind of, it's kind of like a switch. You know, that mental stillness is brought on by physical activity. Or the reverse is also true. When I'm physically still, it's most likely when my mind just gets buzzing. So I just thought that was an interesting juxtaposition. What did you think, Kel?
Oh, I thought it was visually stunning. Very soothing, calming poem in an environment that's, you know, seems to be transforming in its solace. It's just really absolutely beautiful. I really appreciate this writing. It's beautiful. I'll say it again. It's beautiful, Wang. It's beautiful. And I'd love to go there. It's gorgeous.
It looks really lovely. The image that is attached to it with the mountains and this beautiful glacial lake.
They have the coolest restaurant there, too. The Grizzly House. Like, I mean, you have to be a big meat eater because it's all wild game. But they have, like, anything.
I am a sucker for
Go ahead. I was just saying that I'm a sucker for wild meat. Like, I just love it. Like,
yeah.
If it's something I haven't had before, I want it.
Then you would like the Grizzly Challenge. You get a free mug and shirt and a whole bunch of stuff if you can, if you're willing to try a little piece of everything. They have this, like, platter that you, what do you call it? It's like fondue, but it's not fondue. You cook it yourself on this thing, but they give you, like, a little chunk of, like, so many different kinds of meat.
Oh, exotic Korean barbecue? I'd be so down.
Yeah, but it's, like, moose and bear and, like, I don't know, like, everything that would be wild in that park. Anyway, I got sidetracked there because I'm just, like, nostalgic for the Banff.
That
this
is
next
very
one
much
by Marley...
something that sounds like it's made for me.
Yeah? I think you'd love it there. It's so cool. I'm, like, advertising. Right, go to Canada. Martha Gell did an audio for this, so I'm going to play her audio. This will work. Let's see.
Is There Really Justice by Martha Gell. If you long for justice in your mind, it can be a hard thing to find. And if you think in your hand you hold justice, it can leave you feeling cold. For the wrong done to you can't be undone. Time won't work backwards when it's moved on. So we must be careful what we do and say, because justice can be a hard bill to pay. So is there really justice? I don't know. Because we can't unseed seeds we've sown. All that we can do as we move on is just live this day better than the one that's gone. Because justice will elude us every time. And in the end, it's not what we thought we'd find. Because the wrong can be undone, and there is no justice under the sun. So is there really justice? I don't know. Because we can't unseed the seeds we've sown. All that we can do as we move on is live this day better than the one that's gone. So all that we can do, it seems, is be the best person we can be and hope the justice we never seek to find, 'cause true justice lives only in our minds.
Lovely SoundCloud, and thank you for the SoundCloud, Martha. I really enjoyed this. Like, it had a very kind of old-school folksy vibe to it. Like, it almost felt like something that would have come out, like, at this 60s, you know, in the 60s or something like that, or that you'd hear someone playing on an acoustic guitar and singing along to. It's something very pleasant and folksy feeling to it. This piece really makes me think of a lot of conversations that I've had with people about the concept of justice. I frequently find myself feeling like people mistake justice for revenge a lot, you know, and that what makes you feel good, like you're getting back at somebody for something that they've done, isn't necessarily the just thing. It's revenge. You know, you see so many court cases where it's like, well, I hope you rot in prison. You know, that's not necessarily what's actually just. That's just a person feeling angry about the outcome of a wrongdoing or a crime or something that they have foreseen. you know, and I especially think sometimes, like, well, what if the accused isn't even guilty, you know? And now you're saying all of these horrible things, and then isn't that the actual wrong? You know, there's just been so many instances of it where, like, you know, I remember reading a story about a teenage girl who accidentally ran over a small child who was playing in a pile of leaves in the road and didn't even know that he was there. And there were all these people, like, practically with pitchforks talking about, you know, all the horrible things that should happen to her. And it's like, isn't this already a horrible thing that happened to her? I know, so it just makes me think of that and how you have to be careful about what justice actually means, you know, like who gets to decide, like, what is just and what is fair. So I just thought it had a really kind of positive message to it. It almost felt like folk, but also maybe a little touching on gospel, like the 60s, 70s era kind of style gospel. I really enjoyed this piece. Thought it was, I don't know, very pleasant, you know, maybe think almost campfire style. What did you think, Kel?
I really like her message. Be the best person you can be, and you don't have to worry about, you know, justice coming to find you. You know, there's a lot of injustice in the world, and it's not just so much in the court system, but in life, you know, in general. You know, people come at you for what could seem like no reason whatsoever, and, you know, but if you just, you know, mind your own business and be the best person you can be, then you shouldn't have anything to worry about. And she wrote this very well, and I love her singing. It's very folksy and backwoodsy and just really fantastic.
Yeah, no, yeah, good point. Yeah, it's not just in the justice system, yeah, for sure, you know. Yeah, just the best thing you can do is be the best person that you can be. So, excellent. What did you think of Faziana?
Yeah, I think she has a really good attitude with that of just, you know, that line that she repeats, live this day better than the one that's gone. You know, try to be a little bit better each day and grow and, you know, judge yourself based on your own self, not you know, trying to compete with everything that maybe, you know, it's not going to be just in how things end up, but you can just be the best version of yourself that you can. You know, she even, like she says, be the best person we can be. So not necessarily be the best out of everyone, but be the best that you can be. Always put that effort in and try to do what's right. And I think that that's a great message. And I really appreciate her taking the time to make us the audio. You know, if you can't be here, it's wonderful to get an audio so we can hear from the person who wrote it. And you can tell it's written to be a song. The way that it repeats, has the chorus, it works really nicely in the layout as a song.
Point two, yeah, just focusing on yourself and just being the best that you can be doesn't mean perfection. You know, there's varying levels of what's best for somebody else. It's necessarily the best for a different person, but they're also not meant to be compared. So, where are we headed to now?
Now, if Kel can read the one by Naomi Sarah, that would be great.
I would be honored. Fly Fishing by Naomi Sarah. Fueled by passion, I wade into the shimmer of sun, dancing on blue water, stand still, breathe in the tranquil breeze. Draw back, cast out, adjust the right angle and speed, an arc in motion, a quick and subtle delivery must not scare the fish. A temptress with a nymph fly is licking the soft ripples in small bunny leeches. I let my line drift a while before I strip it back. The cold current softly laps my skin, and a tingling chill crawls up my spine. My mind settles, quietened from all the work and worries. As once more I smile, pull back my line, throw again, and just wait to see what happens. And poem. Oh, this has a SoundCloud.
I didn't get it until too late, so the SoundCloud wasn't loaded, but thank you for reading it.
Yes, that's fine. I just noticed that that's
great.
All.
Yep. Great read, Kel. I really enjoyed this piece. It, again, kind of takes you on the journey with the fisher. You're pulled into the river with her, like with the lake or the body of water, casting out. And it, you almost kind of feel what it is that is so lovely about fishing and why people do it, because it is just tranquil. There's something about the waiting and then just enjoying your environment while waiting that makes it so peaceful. There's just a real clarity of the experience. I love the really detailed descriptions of moments in this piece. You know, draw back, cast out at just the right angle and speed, an art in motion, a quick and subtle delivery. You know, just the how and the why of casting, but described with such pacing and deliberation that you feel like the calm of the action, of something that's been done 1,000 times, but just not hurried and not wild, but like very methodical and paced. I just think it's beautifully done here. You know, it's both a tranquil piece in itself and just so well, I think, communicates that feeling, and also works as like a visual kind of natural piece instead of pulling you into the scene. I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a wonderful write from Naomi. I feel the love of fishing and the why. What did you think of Asiana?
I think I've never really been interested in fishing until now. Like, this sounds wonderful. She has brought me over to the side of fishing. The shimmering sun dancing, it just really is a great way to start it off. I like that it's a quick and subtle delivery to not scare the fish. And the just licking the soft ripples, there's something so gentle and beautiful about that. And then the cold current softly laps my skin. Normally I don't think of cold as something that softly laps, but it's a beautiful way of connecting with nature. And that patience that you see in the final stanza of just waiting to see what happens, this feels like a great, like, metaphor for life, you know, just putting yourself out there and you're gentle about it and something might come to you and you're trying, but you're not forcing it. You're letting things come to you. I think that this is absolutely beautiful. It's a great interpretation of fishing, and I think it's a wonderful metaphor.
Yeah, I think it does work well as a metaphor as well. You know, patience and practice. It does work well that way. What did you think, Cal?
Well, I have been fishing, fly fishing, but not in the water. I haven't actually been out in the water. But there's something about just sitting on the bank with your line in the water waiting for the fish, and it's just so calm and serene, and it's an amazing thing. It really is, you know, because you're not really thinking about nothing. You're not really doing anything. You just wait to see if the fish will bite, and it's just a wonderful thing, and I totally get this. And she wrote it in a very beautiful, tranquil way. I can appreciate.
Yeah, I was fishing a lot as a kid. I haven't been fishing in probably 15 years at this point. But I remember enjoying it. You know, it'd be one of those things I'd get up really early to go. It's not just about the weight. Like, it seems like your weight, but you actually, you're not enjoying the journey and the thing, and usually just being running. There's presence. And I think this poem captures that very well. I've never been actually fly fishing. I just think this is a beautifully captures that feeling of fishing, and does work so well as metaphor. It's a wonderful right.
Babbler, are you in the headset?
Yeah, I am.
You're very crackly.
Okay. See what I can do.
It might need, yep, say something else.
Don't know what else to say, so I'm just going to talk continually.
Okay, good. You sound smooth now. You were crackling during your comment, but I can hear you now.
Okay.
I mean, it could just be the radio system, because yesterday it was so crackly during Double Helix. It just... it sounded like there were fireworks going off.
Oh.
The ghost in the machine.
Well,
okay.
No actual fireworks happening. It's pretty quiet in my house, honestly.
My poem is quite different, because everyone else wrote so beautifully about, how the virtues work, and mine is sort of how they aren't true of me. So here's my darkness. Benjamin Franklin Would Hate Me by Faziana. I ponder the value of temperance as I glug vodka to match my pizza binge. Sound sensitivity has me screaming for everyone to shut up. Books and DVDs sorted by genre and alphabetized, but my conduct is as disorderly as my laundry pile. I make new month resolutions because my attention doesn't span a year. If I spend another $200 shipping, we'll be free. That's pretty frugal to avoid a fee. My productivity ebbs and flows, procrastination tasks winning. I fight the good fight, unless the bad boy is pretty. If I'm having one, I might as well have the whole box. Diet's ruined anyway, right? Plus, there isn't a clean plate in the kitchen. I'm not braving that sink. I live with video game boss music, always sure I'll be attacked at any moment. I can confirm women hit a sensual peak in their 30s. Is everyone sexy in here, or are my hormones raging? Despite my complete lack of virtues, I'm the best bitch you know. And boom.
I liked it. There's a lot of fun in this piece. I'm just going to pick out some of the lines I like. I probably relate to this a little too much, but I did really like, I fight the good fight unless the bad boy is pretty. I just really like that as a line, because it works for, like, I don't know why it is, but, like, in so many pop culture things and stuff like that, like, the villain is really attractive, or is that just me? Like, why is the bad guy always got to be so good-looking? But it also just works as, like, a stand-in for temptation, you know? Because it doesn't have to be, like, a bad boy being literally a bad boy in this quote. It works for just about anything, you know? A nap can be your bad boy, you know? Just about anything that you really should resist, but you just don't want to because it's too attractive. And I think this works so well with such a great sense of humor. I also really liked the line, I live with video game boss music, because I can instantly hear it in my head. Like, as an RPG player, I think of like, oh gosh, my brain literally can't remember titles of things lately, so my apologies. This video game that I used to play where like anytime like a dragon is nearby, it instantly goes into like this high threatening music that's just like da-da-da-da-da, and it's like I could just hear that in my head and how well that pairs with my anxiety.
Exactly.
So I just thought it was very well done as like a almost combating Benjamin Franklin's ideas, but also just with so much humor in it that it just makes it enjoyable. I also find it very relatable. So I love that. I also really like that line. Is everyone sexy in the room? My hormones raging. Like, I like to just think that everyone is sexy in the room. Okay. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great piece. What did you think, Cal?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious, actually. But I got to say, books and DVDs sorted by genre and alphabetized by my conduct. But my conduct is as disorderly as my laundry pile. Oh, my goodness, I relate to that. I hate doing laundry. And plus, there isn't a clean plate in the kitchen. I'm not breathing that stink. This is just like a total, complete opposite of all the virtues. And it's just very well done and very amusing. And I thought it was perfect. Good job.
Thanks.
Agreed. Well done. Well done. Fun piece. I just injected a good amount of humor.
Well, you know, if we can't make fun of ourselves.
Oh, yeah. If you're taking yourself too seriously, if you can't make fun of yourself.
Yeah. There's sadly a lot of truth in that poem. As I sit on my bed that's piled with clean laundry. It's clean laundry, mind you, but it's not put away.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of some things that I've seen, like, what was it? It was just, like, the quote that's, like, if you put your clean laundry on your bed, then you'll have to fold it before you go to sleep. And I'm just like, no, this piece is going to be shoved off to one side while I sleep.
It's like jumping into a pile of leaves.
Yeah. The other one I really enjoyed was a bumper sticker I saw not that long ago that was just like, why does patience have to be a virtue? Why can't hurry the F up be a virtue? I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. I thought that was funny. Anyway, where are we going next?
Babbler, I'm going to get you to read the one by A. Shakanovsky.
This is Chastity by A. Shakanovsky. The world is changing overnight. Our moral values are not right when Bible teachings from before are precepts that we now ignore. Pornography was such a crime that perpetrators served jail time, but now there's promiscuity on adult sites for all to see. Premarital sex was once taboo, but now we've changed our point of view, for that's what people mostly do, and no one cares about virtue. When women do just as they please, it leads to STD disease, or teenage mothers giving birth to unwanted children here on earth. Abortion is what many choose. They just don't think it's cruel abuse. To take their baby's life that way, a fetus is not live, they say. And well, this, I mean, talk about a turn of subject matter. For this is kind of a tough one for me, just because I feel like this piece holds quite a bit of judgment in it. You know, just you can tell that the narrator of this piece feels a sense of loss at what they view as, you know, the virtue of chastity, and that premarital sex and pornography, in their opinion, is not a positive thing, and that the world is kind of suffering for it, and that's what's leading to abortion, which they obviously disagree with as well. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into political things here or anything like that. I do feel like it's a bit of a harsh judgment just to say when women do just as they please, because it takes two to tango, as most people know, or at least, you know, two people of opposing, you know, functional genitalia. You know, this is certainly a perspective, you know, and it's hard to write about these things too, because there is so much contention about them, just as it's hard to comment. But that doesn't mean that things shouldn't be written or that opinions shouldn't be shared. You know, these kind of opinions are probably the hardest to talk about in today's kind of social world. You know, you post something like this online sometimes, and it doesn't really matter which side of the fence you're on. People kind of come clamoring for you. So I think it takes kind of a strength to write on these kind of topics, you know, regardless of what your perspective might be. You know, and just this view, I would agree that the world has changed its perspective quite a bit on sexuality, at least for sure here in the U.S., especially over the last, you know, 100 years or so. Maybe not 100 years, because, like, the 1920s were a pretty promiscuous time, too, and that is 100 years. So it's kind of doing its cyclical thing at the moment, I think. But, you know, I think this is a strong right, and it's a very opinionated right. So kudos to the bravery for voicing an opinion like this, because it can be really tricky to do, and you may end up with a lot of contentious commentary posted in, you know, certain places and realms. So I think this is a very brave right. What did you think, Faziana?
Well, I really appreciate your comment on that, because I feel the same. Like, on a personal level, I disagree with most of what he said. But I can appreciate like you said, the bravery of saying what you feel. And, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. And I, even though disagree with what he's saying, I can appreciate that he wrote it well. And just because I don't particularly feel the way that he does, doesn't mean that I won't share his work. You know, I think I'm a very sex positive person, and yeah. So, opposing views, but well done. And I think that you said it very well, Babbler. In that, you know, you can appreciate someone's strength of their right, even if it's not to your own personal values. So thank you, Aisha Shepanovsky, for being bold, because, you know, I think being bold is good no matter what your side. Although I did really intend for this to be about, like, personal reflection and rather than judgment of others. I can see how it would reflect his personal feelings.
Yeah, I do think there is some sense of loss expressed in this piece, you know, on a personal note. You know, I think when you start a poem off with the line, you know, the world is changing overnight, you know, I think there's almost like there's loss and almost like mourning and frustration kind of in that. You know, I'm not a religious person, but I'm a very empathetic person. And so I can picture putting myself into someone choose who is a religious person. And, you know, like, how devastated would I be if I felt like people were making choices for themselves that would land them somewhere like the notion of hell? You know, like, you know, how hard of a feeling would that be to contend with? You know, there's a lot of, like, sorrow and frustration kind of tied up in thinking that that's where you think other people's choices are taking them. So,
I think that's a great piece of empathy from you there. Like, that's true, that, you know, it might come from a good place, even like that. Like you said, though, that it's just saying when women do as they please upsets
yeah.
me, because I'm like, so men are allowed to. I do appreciate that he says our moral value, and we now ignore. So it's not just you or they. He's using pronouns that include himself.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the author views himself as removed from it, or at least the narrator. Kel, is there anything that you wanted to add?
Yeah, actually. I'm going to share a very different point of view from you young ladies, because you are younger, okay, and you're coming from a different era than me and possibly Mr. Shasnovsky, because in the world I grew up in, a lot of these facts were true. The world is changing overnight, and the values, moral values, are different from the Bible teachings that I grew up with, okay? And pornography was a crime at one time. Okay, I wrote a comment for him, okay? And I'm just going to read that. I really appreciate the wisdom in this write. It's sadly something that I have thought about a lot over the last few years. The only thing I might argue with is the fact that blaming women for STDs, when it is actually both men and women that spread disease. And, you know, and that's a sad fact. You know, if you're not protected, it happens. Okay, and also the end, abortion. You know, that's something I feel very strongly about. My son's father wanted me to abort him, and I absolutely refused, and he kept hammering at me. I said, no, I'm going to have my baby, you know, my baby, my child, okay? And it's a matter of opinion, okay? I don't, you know, I don't judge. I refuse to judge because I feel that's hypocritic. But I also see his point of view. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah, no, I do think it's important to leave the door open for conversation and expression. So, I mean, you know, thank you, Kel, for expressing
it's
yourself.
It's all a matter of mindset. It's how we grow up. It's what we've learned as we're growing. And, you know, and we were in a completely different time frame. You know, so, you know, we see things differently than the newer generations do. So, you know, it's just, I don't judge, you know anybody's life, because mine isn't perfect. And I'll never claim that it has been. You know, I've done things that I'm not proud of. You know, but there you go. You know, life is life, and we move on.
Yeah, people are imperfect, you know. And
exactly.
I do think that empathy and understanding is important. You know, certainly, just as
definitely.
I would never tell anybody they have to have an abortion, I would also never tell them that they have to have a child they don't want, you know. That's
no.
To me, that's just the same coin, you know. So
I feel it's personal choice, but I'm also extremely pro-life because of my own circumstances. All right.
Yeah. No, and that's the beauty of it. That is perfectly acceptable. You know, like that's in my opinion, how it should be. So thank
exactly.
you for sharing with us. And
no
and also thank for the brave write from Shakanovsky.
Yes.
Where are we headed to next, Ephesiana?
I can't remember who just read that one. I got lost in the conversation. Who read that one?
Babbler read that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then, Kel, will you please read this next one by A.P. Wanderer?
Certainly. Virtues, Tranquility. This would be a very popular one. In the slate room of ivy curtains, every character's eyes pierce through rice paper dialectics. Silently, prudence induces action through loyalty over economic reality. Compassion, pickpockets, confrontation with a tongue of steel. Smoke of remote portraits linger, cobblestones of human thought, a feeble brook amidst winded wood bend. Isolated classrooms, a courtroom to awake and arise. Executive suites helpless hands. Messages stamped, soldiers coming home to root communities, refugees sifting the soils of history, searching for compassion. Trees planted by the waters of today, this one-sided, tired, huddled masses to breathe free, seek untrodden paths. North wind shaped perceptions, stamped foreheads of the hungry, humble, frail fingers, nimble and long, hand once closed and strong. Marching bands lingering behind, hear footsteps on the pavement, on an echo in the street, California's coast and summer's cruel concrete, in a land flowing with milk and honey, songs of generous bread, keys shutting the door through hunger and fear, hearing shrills, impediment of arms, storied lessons watched, our values die, never to repeat. Mirrors cradled fire, belligerence is outrun upon benevolence. Patience is struck with chivalrous honor, katana unsheathed upon a thousand suns. Dignity and patience will bear the unbearable. Clouded shadows, sunbeams lost in the dusk, the snow descends from whence unearthed injustices of buried dreams came. Shall virtue become the head with no spine? May flight's tattered fray transcend and soar. Amber waves fill a whispered promise. Quilled pens of voices, nobility her wind whispering. Shall bones dissuade benevolence with no hands? Shall courage burn a poet's ink-stained feet or look to pathways untrodden stand? Faith holds water, a tiny mustard seed's hand, hope for tomorrow, a mighty grain of sand. Humming fills speaking words, rectitude will become our stature. Unfolding an empty vessel, thirsty to receive, shaded branches reach, voices desire, dearest child. Diaphragm sing from New York City to fields of Kansas wheat, cobblestones of human thought shivering, tweed in hand, freedom's promise finished, sewn pleat, slowly in silent syllables, solemn sounds calm, darkness of despair, a rushing torrent's precipice, dwelling place breathes its swift vapors to tranquility's circling air. End poem. Wow.
Great read, Kel. I really enjoyed this piece. There are so many visual and interesting concepts that kind of spider web through each other. You know, it kind of goes there's a lot of tie-ins here that kind of go from one line to another. For example, isolated classrooms, a courtroom to awaken, rise. And I see awaken and arise, and then we're taken to like an executive suite, which, you know, typically is like a hotel room or something, you know, with a bed in it. But then that says helpless hands, you know, and talks about stamping and communities and kind of how, you know, the helping hand and how it takes hands to stamp. But then that takes the word root and ties that to soil. And communities is kind of tied to refugees. There's a lot of, just kind of playing off one word to the next. It's almost, I can't think of the term again, my brain lately, but where you just kind of say what immediately comes to mind when you hear one word. So it just kind of piggybacks off of itself into these really kind of interesting and complex imageries. And a big piece that I see kind of wending its way through here is just the idea of patience, you know, like all things kind of in time. And it's not necessarily all good things or all bad things. It's like literally all things. I really enjoyed when we get to the section 5 in particular. I loved the concept of faith holds water in a tiny mustard seed's hand. You know, like, it's nothing. It's almost nothing now, but it can become so many things and become such a big thing, and it's really the faith that'll lead you there. And then hope for tomorrow, a mighty grain of sand. And when you see a grain of sand, there's nothing particularly mighty about it. It's really when you get the millions and billions of them, that it really builds something that can tear down, you know, entire mountains and continents and build things like the Grand Canyon, or beaches, or, you know, some of the most beautiful sites that exist on the planet are due to grains of sand. But no single grain of sand is particularly mighty. You know, I can't imagine the amount of time it would take for a single grain of sand to break down something to be as monumental as some of the sites that we see. I really love this. It's just the kind of piggybacking imagery with this undertone of just kind of virtue to get you through all things, namely tranquility and patience are the two big ones that I see, but also perhaps like charity and compassion and things like that as well. And the tie-ins of, like, humanity, just human experiences of hunger and war and suffering, but also of joy and generous bread and things like that, just interwoven with the natural imagery as well. I think it's just very well done. It's beautifully interwoven. It's almost like a basket-woven poem that I found very enjoyable to read. Oh, what did you think, Cal?
Well, as you said, it's very complex, a very complex piece, and it's very deep. And in some ways, I sense a discordant, disharmony note, harmonious note to it. And but you know, it's all like a. In a sense, it's showing an opposite to the sense of tranquility, because it is so discordant, and it's just full of, oh golly, noise. It's really full of noise, and it's gorgeous. It really is. It's a very beautiful, beautiful written piece, but it's also very noisy and discordant. But I think that's the point he's trying to make in this is, you know, like
solemn sounds calm darkness of despair. A rushing torrent pressed this dwelling place, breathes its swift vapors to tranquility circling air. You know, it just all brings it down to the end. You know, calm down. Be tranquil. You know, it's just too much going on. And there's a lot going on in this piece. And it's absolutely fantastic.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I love the your perspective there on how noisy it is. It's not really something that stood out to me. I did kind of pick up on the discordance, you know, like there is a lot of positive and negative in here. It is very busy. I guess I would view it almost as kind of like harmonic rather than discordant. But I love the perspective because it does definitely play on the positives and the negatives at the same time. That's a really great observation. Thank you, Kel. What did you think, Ephesiana?
I liked it. I think I liked the fifth section the best, where Quilled pens a voice's nobility, her wind whispering. Something about that stanza really stood out to me. But the whole thing is great, and I think it was Phil My Eyes who once said, if you read the last line of each stanza, it really connects the poem. And I did that, and I think it's beautiful. The last line of each stanza is amazing. Cobblestones of human thought, a feeble brook amongst wind-wooded bend. Humble, frail fingers, nimble and long, hand once close and strong. Hearing shrills, impediment of arms, storied lessons, watch our values die, never to repeat. The snow descends from whence unearthed justice, injustice of buried dreams come. Faith holds water, a tiny mustard seed's hand, hope for tomorrow, a mighty grain of sand. The last line of each stanza is just absolutely gorgeous. And I love what you had to say, Babbler, about the sand and that the mightiness of a tiny grain of sand and the possibility of a mustard seed. And I believe there is a parable about mustard seeds, too, that I can't quite remember. But I know that there's mustard seed in particular has some kind of significance. Beyond just the possibility of growth. So I think this is a wonderful, intelligent piece that really I'd probably have to read a few more times to get everything that's in there.
Just to show you how weird and sometimes tangential my brain goes, when you talk about the parable of the mustard seed and the possibility of growth, I'm like, and tastiness?
I love it. I do love mustard. There's this turmeric mustard that the health food store has that I am obsessed with. And they stopped making it for like 2 years, probably because pandemic stuff. And I was just like mourning this mustard. And then a week or two ago, my husband comes home and he's like, guess what's back? I'm like, the mustard. I was way too excited.
Supply chain right now. So bad. I eat a lot of Asian food, and I make a lot of Asian food, and it's just what I prefer to eat. And so I eat a lot of mustard and vinegar and chili powder and paste. So I don't know. When I read mustard, I'm like, tasty. And then I immediately start thinking of, like, noodles with mustard and vinegar, which is, like, a really Korean thing to eat. Anyway.
I love the tangents that our minds get on.
I was like, why does my brain go there? Tasties? Like, that's such a... Clearly not what the poem is about, but that's what my brain is about, so...
It's referencing food. You know, it's fair.
All right, where are we going now?
I'm going to read Ages of Empires by Metaphysical Migraines. The dawn of civilization, where polite conversation grew from what we knew to obsessive observation. Just like this current chaos, which is out of order, in the system of control on every land and border. a commune turned into a communist community. Then we learned we've earned in a society. I'm reaching, not preaching, an understanding of the ages with truth as proof to keep us turning pages. Of history told gold was bold and wealthy, while silver second was reckoned still healthy. Just as bronze today is third in the race, it was raw and wore in a different time and place. Then came the age of iron and the lady or maiden, singing along with a song of being heavy laden. Both bore a burden with tales of skullduggery, of white-collar crime and more common thuggery. Now ow is wow, and no pain is no gain. In these times we can abstain or refrain. Within each of us is a story to be heard, akin to inner grin or glory with a word. We still have freedom of choice to listen or read, and indeed use our voice to object or be agreed. On where we're being led, time will surely tell, going round in circles on a circus wishing well. End poem.
Great read, Ephesiana. This piece, the first thing that catches my eye right away is just how rhythmic it is. I mean, it has a very obvious rhyme scheme, but it also has a lot of internal rhyme, and it also has a lot of internal rhythm. You know, just those first opening lines, the dawn of civilization where polite conversation grew from what we knew to obsessive observation. Like, there's the rhyming, but there's just also the rhythms of those words, like civilization, conversation, like the speed of the syllables line up very well to give this a very rhythmic feel to it, which makes it an enjoyable and kind of a fun read just due to the technicality of that, which I really enjoyed. I like playing with that myself in my writing sometimes. Just really getting crazy with the rhythms and the rhymes of pieces. So I really appreciated that here. I mean, there's definitely some negative views of, you know, the current states of society, which, you know, they keep it kind of vague. They don't get too into it, you know, just as much as it is that, like, as society has kind of developed, we've kind of taken on, you know, crime and the weight of things and just how it seems like the narrator thinks that life is kind of a grind, basically, and that politics in general are kind of difficult. The last stanza, you know, we still have freedom of choice to listen or read, and indeed use of our voice to object or be agreed on where we're being led, time will surely tell, going around a circus or a circus wishing well. You know, just kind of the masses being led around and around. And it's, we have these freedoms, but, you know, is it enough? You know, like, are we using them the way that they should be used? Or is it just kind of like, well, this is available to you and just go with the status quo, which I think is kind of what they're saying. I was also really attracted to the first line of the second stanza, just because a commune turned into a communist community. Because, I mean, the root of the three main words in this are the same. You know, commune, commune, commune. It's just different suffixes that changes the meanings of the word. And then it also, you know, there's the subtext of this, you know, because I think when people picture the word commune, you kind of picture, like, the kind of hippie-ish kind of working together kind of societal thing, you know, a lot of, you know, living together and farming together kind of a thing. But then when you view a community, it's like a neighborhood and people working together, and it's it feels less niche in a way, more generalized. But then communist has definitely been politicized. But it's kind of interesting because they're all the same root with just different suffixes that really give you different interpretations of the word itself and different context, which just linguistically I found rather interesting about that piece. So I enjoyed this. I thought it was, you know, rhythmic, kind of fun to read. It had a nice pacing to it. And I think it had a nice you know, kind of a poking message at it. It doesn't go too deep in one particular political direction so much just to say, like, you know, are you really paying attention? Is kind of the subtext that I get out of it. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting write with definitely some linguistic complexity that I enjoyed. What did you think of Asiana?
I think stylistically, this is amazing. Like, it has a great cadence. It has internal rhymes all over the place. It has good outward rhyme as well. It has alliteration, like obsessive observation, current chaos. It sounds amazing. Like, I feel like this could be almost musical, maybe rapped, I don't know, but there's a rhythm to it that is wonderful. And then it has some plays on words, like when it's talking about the Age of Iron and Lady or Maiden, I was thinking Iron Maiden, like the band, the way that they're capitalized there.
I think that was intentional, for sure.
Yeah, it's a reference. And I love the word skullduggery. And then the thuggery. There's some really fun phrasing, but it also has a deep message. And I love that combination. I don't know if he's in any of my rap groups, but I think I'm going to try to recruit him. Or them. I actually don't even know if it's a guy, but I think so. I don't know. Really great writing style and gives us something to think about. So I loved this one.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very fun and interesting read. I also found the picture interesting. You know, they called it Ages of Empires, but then as an image that they included here is a picture of a video game where you kind of build civilizations. I mean, I've played this. I'm RPG junkie, but I thought that was an interesting tie, especially since it's kind of an older version of the game. So,
yeah.
Anyway, just an interesting note there.
That's true. It's like we're playing with civilization. I feel like it's symbolic somehow that they chose that picture. I'm glad that you pointed that out.
It almost kind of points at, like, it's a game, you know? Like, it's, you know, someone's leading us around in ridiculous directions, you know? And maybe you think you're the leader, but are you really?
Yeah.
Where are you in this game scheme? You know, bunch of NPCs here. So
I like that. That reminds. I really have to watch that movie Free Man. I've been wanting to. And you said NPC, and I'm like, oh my god, I have to go do that.
I saw it. I went and saw it. It was good. It was funny. I laughed more than I thought I would.
Awesome. Do you want to read your poem?
All right. Sure. Because I felt like it related kind of well to the theme, especially to the virtue of industry. But it's not necessarily from like a super positive perspective. Anyway, this is called Comfortable. I miss poverty. Poverty had me hungry, walking crumbling asphalt, cutting trails between trailers, duct tape chucks, boarding torn jeans, no time for bullshittery, drunk on swagger, street smart. Poverty gave me goals, pushed me to work hard, count pennies and reject vices and pitfalls, swathed in black leather, smelling like sex. Being comfortable is, frankly, uncomfortable. I sit on my ass 4 hours a day after sitting on my ass for 8 hours a day, watching my bank account swell like I just hit it big, Vegas without the lights. Why bother climbing the ladder when you're already out of the hole? The fear of homelessness got me out of bed, running to catch the bus. Now I just get up to piss. End poem.
That was a great read and an amazing write that hits me really hard. And I feel connected to this really deeply, because it's true. You know, you get, I don't think I was quite to the same level of poverty as a child, but I definitely was working my way to, like, you know, get out of that. Because we used to joke that I lived in the ghetto, but, like, in the town I lived in, ghetto was not as ghetto as, like, you see on TV. But still, I was like, I am going to do something. I'm going to go to university. I'm going to get out of here. And I had such motivation. And now I've gotten quite lazy. And, you know, the sitting on my ass for 4 hours a day after sitting on my ass for 8 hours a day, I relate to that so well. I did video conferences all week, and I spent the whole time, you know, staring at my computer and doing the things. And then what did I do after I was done work? I was here on All Poetry staring at my computer. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's true. And the poverty gave me goals, pushed me to work hard. That I like that, you know. I feel like there is that strong motivation and the hardworking effort that that you see in people who are struggling. I hear so many people, like, disparaging of, like, the homeless and the working poor as if, like, they're being lazy and not trying. But actually, from what I've seen, they try harder than the people who are comfortable. I really respect the rawness and the honesty of this poem. And I think that there's, like, a stabbing truth to this that I think people will connect with. Now I just get up to piss. It's so direct and gritty, and I love it.
Thanks. Yeah, no, this is this is a personal right. I forgot what I read. I read someone else's poem that was a front page pick, I believe. And they talked about riding a bike through a trailer park. And their perspective on the children that they saw in this trailer park was terrible. It made me feel angry, which, I mean, to me, says it is a great poem, you know, because as a kid who grew up in a shitty trailer park, you would see the middle-income and upper-middle-income kids ride their nice bikes through your neighborhood, and you definitely feel them look at you, you know, and you'd wonder, like, what do they see when they look at me, you know? And to read a poem that tells me what they saw when they looked at me and that it was exactly what I was afraid they saw, it made me just kind of angry, you know, and it made me a little bit bitter, but then it also reminded me that, like, that's also what made me get up in the morning and work really hard every day, because I didn't want what they thought or what I thought they thought to be true, that I was just the next generation coming up to live in this shithole, you know, and that there's no escape from this, you know, kind of bleak and nasty reality. You know, there's no hiding, like, you know, that everything's rotting out and molding and gross, and that everyone's front yard is full of garbage, you know, and nobody cares about the reasons for that either. Like, you know, hey, it actually costs money to have your trash taken out. You know, surprise, surprise, that's not a free service. So, like, if you don't have money, it ain't happening. You know, but then I thought, you know, like, how hard I work. And then I realized every time I was talking about it, I was putting it in the past tense, you know? And it's like, when was the last time I really worked that hard for something? The last time I really worked that hard for something was when I didn't have anything, you know? It's weird kind of looking at life from the opposite angle, you know, and being like, you know, I don't try as hard as I used to try. You know, I really do. I sit at a desk all day and do my job rather complacently. Like, yeah, I don't slack off. I'm not terrible at my job, but, like, I don't have nearly the fire under my ass that I did when I was younger, when it was about getting somewhere, to. Now it's just about maintaining the status quo, which isn't really as motivating. So anyway, just kind of my chain of thought while writing this. So kudos to the poet that I can't remember who wrote the poem about observing a trailer park that just really kind of pissed me off and set me on a chain of thought.
Well, you know what? I'd love that this is a response to that. You know, if you can take that anger and channel it into something like this, to be self-reflective and to, you know, kind of stand up for that, the strength that you had in that situation, I think that is the perfect response. So, I don't know. I'm weirdly proud of you. Like, I don't know. Is that an odd thing to say that I'm
Thanks,
proud of
Mom.
You?
Mom, no, I'm kidding. Okay. I don't mean this at all in any way as like a negative commentary or denigration on that poem, because it was perfect. You know, it made me feel strongly, which is the point of poetry. You know, it definitely elicited a rather strong emotional response from me, which, I mean, I did like it. I believe I left a comment too. I mean, and not a negative comment. I'm not a dick. Like, you know, it's okay that I'm upset, but that's the sign that it's a good poem, not a bad poem, and I don't need to tell him, like, I was the poor kid in the trail, you know, like, nobody cares. So,
I don't know. I think if it was me, I would appreciate you linking to your poem that you wrote and see what it sparked.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'd have to go back and find it now, but I just remember reading it and being like, oh, so, you know, all those kids that I saw riding through my trailer park, that really was what they saw and what they thought, you know, and
yeah,
like that's what pissed me off then too, you know, just feeling the judgment of the kids cruising through the neighborhood and just being really kind of teed off by it, because it's like, you know what they're seeing and you know what they're thinking and what they're assuming about you. But it was kind of another thing and an enlightening thing to read that perspective actually written down. And by the way, kudos on the self-awareness of the author being like, hey, I was judging these kids in the trailer park.
Yeah.
Like, you know, well, dick move, but, you know, that's kids for you.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not even kids. I know I get really mad at my coworkers sometimes because they'll be talking about kind of the street population who uses my work. You know, I'm a librarian. I work in a free public space. We have a lot of street entrenched people who use our space, and the comments that people make sometimes, and I'm just like, you don't know what it's like to be them. I was almost them. I wasn't quite, but like I came very close a few times, and I'm just like, you have no idea what you're talking about, and I get so mad at them. And I feel your anger, and I love the way that you used it. I think we have time for at least one more, and we do have one more from this contest. This is Humbling by Robert J. Tice. I love the world that humbled me on my march towards 33, a time so prime, profuse with pride, when confidence intensified and knowledge led me to exalt my education to a fault. In truth, I had to learn much more than anything I read before, experiences yet to gain, mistakes to make, the novel pain of giving up some foolish dream, then tread the edge of self-esteem and reckon with the emptiness where suppositions evanesce. I took such pleasure in a fact, the trivia I could extract, my theories of the cosmic ways, among those bold, conceited days. I'm just a student, one who sees the paradox of Socrates. To understand, I do not know, and yet enlighten as I go. To question things, myself as well, mull modesty and rarely dwell. At any point of prominence, no humbled heart wants dominance. End poem.
Great read. I enjoyed this poem. I mean, you know, it's set up nicely in letting you know that this person's about to take themselves down a peg or be taken down a peg, you know. But there is such like a swaggering confidence of youth, you know, and I think everybody goes through that phase, you know, where you're young and you think you're, you know, like, I'm an adult now, you know, like some magical wellspring of understanding of the world is like bestowed upon you in your teenage years, which is just not true. And everybody tells you that, but like, still, I think everybody has a phase where they go through it. And then there's just this part of aging where you realize, no, I actually really don't know Jack. You know, and that while I think I'm all that, I'm really kind of, you know, I still need to work for things. It's not so much about being worthless as it is just coming to grips that you don't have, like, a perfect understanding of the world. And also that nobody does. So it doesn't make you necessarily less than. It just makes you equal to, which is in itself, I think, humbling. And I think that's summed up well, especially in this last couplet, you know, at any point of prominence, no humbled heart wants dominance, you know. And it's not necessarily to want to be less than, it's just not wanting to be first all the time. There's a certain level of responsibility required to come to being like the dominant, to being, you know, first, that, you know, isn't necessarily comfortable. And not everybody wants to be there. But I do like this. I think it talks about, you know, just maturing and also just the foresight too, to understand that even 33 is not by any means old. As said by someone who is 34, you know, I'm so much older, wiser. not really. But just, it's interesting. This makes me think a lot of myself and how I, how my perspective on the world has changed and how I'm kind of in that similar place where, you know, you realize that you're becoming older, but you're not old. And you've gone through, you know, some hardships and pains at this point. You know, the world has humbled you in many ways. Just kind of that teenage swagger has dulled a bit. So I enjoyed it, and I think it's very well said. And I enjoy the couplets and the rhyme. Make it kind of just like a fun, kind of lighter read, even though it has some, I think, pretty heavy material in it about, you know, just the change of perspective that pairs itself with aging and becoming a more humble and mature person. So I thought this was a great write. So thank you, Robert G.
I liked it. I had a professor who once said that the more you learn, the more you realize that you have to learn. Like the smarter you are, the more you realize how little you know. And you become even more dependent on other people's expertise because you realize how much more is out there. And it is quite humbling. So I think that he's really, you know, self-reflective and philosophical in this piece, which I enjoy. I really liked I'm just a student who sees the paradox of Socrates. And what was right after that? There's something about, now I've lost my spot. Socrates, where'd you go? To understand, I do not know, and yet enlighten as I go. You know, to realize that you don't know everything ends up allowing you to share more knowledge and to absorb it, that self-awareness is really important. And when he says to question things, myself as well, I think that's a really important caveat there because, yes, question things, you know, be a critical thinker, wonder about what you're hearing, but also question yourself, your own bias, that you're putting into things, how you might be interpreting things, that would be really important. And Oh, we lost Babbler. Got disconnected. There's only 4 minutes left. So what I'm going to do is just read this carryover by Jaskaran, because I don't know if I'm going to get Babbler back in the 2 minutes that we have left. Gone in 60 Seconds by Jaskaran. And this was actually for Double Helix, which is the show I do with Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. And that was yesterday, but we ran out of time. We all die. The goal isn't to live forever. The goal is to create something that will. I look into the sky, then plummet to the ground. My emotions flood from the horrid, I'm going to start over. I got a blip on the phone. Okay, so here we go. I'm sorry, Jaskaran, I'm going to start over. I look to the sky, then plummet to the ground. My emotions flood from there, from their horrid bond. My emotions free, but can they save me now? I close my eyes and chills run through my spine. Everything stops, and imagine my words, footprints in the sand. Hungry for sunrise, chasing away illusions, skydiving in the crochet of breeze, plowing feet in the middle of the seas, the roar of the landing hounding me, joyful gain, sitting proud on the prow of a saddle, jacket fluffing in the saunter, breath stirring in willow leaves, a butterfly floats and balances, hugs the mountains, welcome fog that clarifies, arms that stretch for miles, when death embraces us, tenderly touching our lips, choking away last joy, surrender willingly to its seduction. Still lakes wait, vibrate silence, stir from potent depths to feel the breeze. Sigh. End poem. Those last three lines were in quotation marks, so that is a quote, but I don't see who it is quoted from. Babbler, what did you think?
I liked this piece. You know, it's really interesting. Just the concept of how to go into death, you know, this visualization of what potentially it looks like to die, you know, to look up while plummeting down, is such an interesting sensation to start with. You know, I picture almost like having the floor just pulled out from under you, and just what that would be like. You know, it's an interesting visualization of just kind of giving up life just to see what happens. Some phrases that I really liked were welcome fog that clarifies. You know, a fog that clarifies. Usually fog obscures, but the idea of it bringing clarity, I kind of think along the lines of, you know, perhaps it bringing simplicity or blurring out the background noise and putting into highlight, you know, the things that matter, almost how it's used on like a set or, you know, in cinema and stuff like that, where, you know, things get fogged out and you really only see the main characters or the main goings on in a scene. And the way fog can clarify in that way, which I thought was interesting, you know. And then to end it on the line, you know, arms that stretch for miles on one stanza and then lead into the next with when death embraces us. You almost picture like the long mountains that I kind of tie back to the arms that kind of tie back to the mountains, like just being embraced by a landscape and at the same time that landscape being death. I thought was interesting. Again, the juxtaposition of words at the end to tenderly touching our lips, followed by choking away last joy. You know, that's kind of an interesting duality there. You know, you just tenderly touch someone's lips, kind of gives you something like loving and not necessarily romantic, but, you know, closeness there, intimate for sure. Followed by choking away the last joy, you know, becomes suddenly violent, which is reminiscent of those opening lines, looking to the sky and then plummeting to the ground. I found it very fascinating. There's a real duality to this piece of like moments of tranquility and peacefulness followed by like violent fear which I found interesting and yet kind of similar to the way that I see a lot of depictions of death. You know, it's either like a violent kind of fear or a gentle acceptance. So I really liked the intertwining of those two things. It's like a thrill ride and a seduction at the same time. I thought this was a great write and very interesting. What did you think of Aziana?
Well, I loved your comment. We actually, the episode ended 20 seconds ago, so I can't comment, but it was really great to have you back.
I got carried away, sorry.
No, that's okay. It just, time ran out. It was giving me the 5 seconds. I'm not totally sure if we're still being recorded right now. I know that we're off the air live. So good night, and it was really great to have you back, and thank you, everyone. Thank you, Kel, for calling in.
Thanks for having me.